Next case on the court's calendar is Granite Construction versus Remote Energy Solutions, cases number 69618, 69989. Good morning, Mr. Elmore, Mr. Creighton.
Thank you very much. My name is Rick Elmore. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Granite Construction Company. With me today is Mr. Rod Cooper, who's a representative of Granite. In the first part of 2012, Ann Carpenter, who was a representative of the plaintiff, Remote Energy Solutions, began negotiating a contract with Granite. It was her desire in the beginning to have an employment contract. That was not acceptable to Granite. Negotiations went on for a period of time, and ultimately the parties executed a consulting agreement. The first of those consulting agreements was executed in or started on November 15th of 2012, went to May 31st of 2013. Thereafter, the parties executed a second agreement for the balance of the year 2013. And then on January 1st, the third agreement was signed by the parties, and it describes a term of January 1st of 2014 through the end of 2014, but it contained a provision that allowed for early termination, and Granite elected to exercise its right to terminate. And so the working relationship between the parties ended in July of 2014. It is undisputed in this case, absolutely undisputed, and the district court so held that these three agreements were separate and distinct. That is specifically found by the district court, and the respondent in this litigation has repeatedly acknowledged that the parties signed three separate agreements. Those agreements have a start date, a specific start date. They have a specific ending date, the dates that I have described to you here. The court recognized the existence of these three contracts. They've never been in dispute. But having acknowledged the existence of three distinct contracts, the court went on to find, and I submit to you, this is a plain error on the part of the district court in this case, that there was an issue about whether one of the contracts, and most importantly, it's the third contract, somehow substituted for one or both of the first two contracts. It then made an analysis based upon the principles pertaining to substituted contracts, concluded that there wasn't a substituted contract, and for reasons that are totally unclear on the record, concluded that the first and second agreements continued on in time, or in a time past the very specific provision for an expiration date in the contract. Respondents in this case argue extensively that principles of novation apply here, and the court was correct in its determination that there was not an ovation, that the first and second contracts continued, but they provide absolutely no explanation of how that might occur given the specific end dates set forth in the first and second contracts. We've never argued principles of novation. We don't here this morning. It's my absolute contention to you that the Ford case, which is the Utah case that the district court relied on, doesn't have anything to do with the facts and circumstances of this contract relation. The first contract ended on May 31st of 2013. The second contract ended on December 31st of 2013. A new contract without a bonus provision, and it was signed starting January 1st of 2014. No obligation existed after January 1st of 2014 to pay a bonus of any kind to Ms. Carpenter, because the then applicable contract between the parties did not contain a bonus provision.
So you're saying none of these rights could have accrued under the first or second contract?
Absolutely. They absolutely could not. Okay. The impact would be, if that were the case, is let's take the first contract, November to May. What the respondents argue is that this is in effect like an annuity contract, that in spite of the termination date in the contract, some right to be paid the bonus is ongoing for some unspecified time.
But what if the work and all the efforts occurred during the first and second contract period, and that's when all these negotiations were going on, and the benefit of those negotiations didn't occur until later, and after the expiration of those two contracts, and yet you got the benefit of the work and efforts. Understanding the nature of what's going on here and the complexity of the negotiations that would be taking place, how do you explain that?
Well, first of all, the contract contains some fairly specific language about when the work is supposed to be performed. I mean, it has language in it that says work resulting from this contract. And that could only mean a contract in the first instance that is 6.5 months long in duration. And the second contract is 7 months long. But it also contains exactly the same language, work resulting from this contract. So
what precludes work resulting from this contract to be realized as a benefit later?
Well,
if the work was done during that contract period and the work resulted from efforts that were expended during that contract period.
The contract contains a specific end date, okay? And what work she did generating a job had to occur during that time period, and the job had to be identified during that that time period, during that 6 or 7 month time period. And I'm going to touch in a minute here on this issue about whether she did this in any event. That's the second issue.
Okay.
But what the district court is saying, in essence, is, hey, after you sign the first contract, you're open forever to a claim that a job that you get 6, 7, 8 years down the road somehow relates back to work that occurred in 2013 when there was a bonus provision that was applicable. And there isn't anything in this contract that suggests that either party intended that to occur. Right?
Well, it depends a lot on how one interprets the phrase you've been referencing, Mr. Elmore. For work resulting from this contract, that's used in 3A. That's also used, at least in the context of the two contracts that generated the bonus claim, in this case under subsection 2 of Appendix B, a 2% bonus will apply to resulting work. And then it says, in addition, as well as under expanded work orders as may apply, which would imply to me at least that if there were a contract entered into during the six-month contract. Let's just take the first one. And then there were work orders that were entered into subsequent to that time. The bonus claim would apply to that, to those future work orders as well. Now, the court has resolved this on summary judgment, the district court did, surrounding this, the rejection of your integration argument and this novation issue. But I'm wondering, in light of the presentations that both sides made to the district court, if this matter required some interpretation from the parties as to what these phrases for work resulting from this contract means. This seems to pose to me at least three hypotheticals. Had Granite entered into a contract that Ms. Carpenter presented to them during the six-month period, I don't think anybody's disputing the fact that she's entitled to a bonus on that contract. Would that be fair?
And she was, in fact, paid in 2013, yes.
Okay. And so then what happens in a situation where she brings the client to Granite on the final day of the six-month period, and on the next day, the Granite enters into the contract with the person she brought to them? Is she entitled to a bonus on that under the first contract?
The answer to that question is no, okay, because the contract has terminated. But that also doesn't address the question of whether or the validity of the claim that she is responsible for bringing the work. I mean, I still think that's an important consideration in Grant's position here in this case.
Well, and then the third hypothetical is along the lines of what your argument is. She notifies you folks, your client, I should say, of the existence of these two prospects, Newmont and Eric, and says, these guys might do business with you, and then some months after the second contract ends, they're successful in getting a deal with them. Why wouldn't there be a bonus on that? But it seems to me that all of these hypotheticals turn around the meaning of the phrase for work resulting from this contract. Everybody's been pretty lathered up in the discussion about integration and novation clauses. Why wouldn't this phrase decide this question? It's the condition under which the bonus is earned.
I simply want to remind you that Appendix B contains specific language as to what she is supposed to do to earn the bonus, okay? She uses the word expand in one category of work. In the next one, the word is bring. In the last category, it's establish. Very clearly, she's responsible for doing one of those things in the contract time period. And the reality in this case is that there is no evidence that she did that for either the Barrick or the Newmont contract in question. The record is clear that Granite had other people, Mr. Cooper, Mr. Collins, out trying to solicit work. The uncontradicted evidence in the record I submit is that it was Mr. Collins who was responsible for the generation of these two contracts. Ms. Carpenter has testified she didn't know anything about those contracts, didn't ever talk to the people who represented the parties to negotiate them, didn't know anything about them. They just came to Granite in April and June of 2004 after the bonus provision was gone. My last point it relates to this issue of the validity of the offer of judgment. We submit that the offer of judgment was invalid on the day that it was served on Granite. It couldn't be revived by a continuance that nobody knew about at the time. It wasn't resurrected in any respect, and we've cited a case in Florida for that proposition.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have exhausted your time, Mr. Elmore. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Creighton.
Good morning, Justices. Court, my name is Ken Creighton, and I am counsel for Respondent Remote Energy Solutions. With me today is the principal of Remote Energy Solutions, Ann Carpenter, and also with me from our office is Tim Summers. In this case, the district court granted summary judgment in favor of Remote Energy Solutions and awarded it a bonus under the first two consulting agreements. It correctly concluded that the integration clause in the third agreement did not supersede, but the third agreement did not contain a bonus provision. It did not that integration clause did not supersede the bonus provisions in the first two agreements. It also correctly concluded that the consulting agreements did not impose any specific causal connection or exclusivity requirements that Remote had to satisfy in order to obtain a bonus. The key contract term is whether mining work awarded to Granite resulted from the business development efforts of Remote. And here they did, because prior to Remote.
Well, that's not exactly what it says under number two of Appendix B under the first and second contract. If one agrees with the analysis of the district court that the third contract has no bearing on the first two and that the right to recover in this case rests on the language of the second contract, I assume that's your position.
Correct.
Then isn't it still necessary to evaluate the meaning of what is intended by for work resulting from this contract? Does that mean A, work that under your theory comes in after the termination date, or B, under Mr. Elmore's theory, work that is produced during the term of the contract? And then in addition to that, what is meant by the language in subsection 2 of Appendix B dealing with these specific claims? Ann Carpenter will bring work to Granite at new mines in states where Granite has mining related work, but at sites different than the existing work, number one above. As Ann Carpenter is able to establish new work at new sites, a 2% bonus will apply to resulting work, and as I mentioned earlier, future work orders. Why isn't that language invoking some sort of causal connection between the basis for the bonus and the work performed?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, early on in these negotiations, Mr. Cooper, who's here today, the regional manager for Nevada.
And forgive me, Mr. Creighton,
sure.
You're soft-spoken. Would you
okay.
mind speaking up?
Sure.
In our sound system is a little weak, and if you don't mind, it'd be helpful.
Sure. I am soft-spoken. I apologize for that.
But no,
I'll great. Raise the volume. So early on, while they were negotiating these contracts, Mr. Cooper sent an email to his then supervisor. This is in November of 2012. That the bonus concept is, it acts as a finder's fee or a commission. That's the purpose of it. The Appendix B really is a way to try and define what, and you'll notice in here that the percentage bonus, it's either one, two, or three. There's no zero. There's only two mines for which Remote Energy would not receive a bonus, and one was in Arizona and one was in Utah, and those are not in dispute in this case. So what they were trying to do is figure out, in these existing relationships, again, Mr. Cooper's testimony in deposition was we had bid over $300 million in mining roof projects in Nevada before remote energy came on the scene. Okay, of that amount bid, how much work did you actually receive? No awards. Zero awards. So they did do some road work, for example, connecting a mining site to Interstate 80 or some other kind of state road, but they hadn't done what in the vernacular is referred to as inside the fence mining work in over 15 years before remote energy came on. So they're trying to determine how, if it's an existing relationship and it's a 1% bonus, how do you define that so that they can get the correct bonus categories of either 1, 2, or 3%. Now keep in mind, when she performed the work for Newmont, the first project for Newmont, and a project for Coeur and a project for Ally, that resulted in about $228,000 worth of mining work. And they paid a bonus of 2%. No causal connection, no questions asked. She simply presented it on invoice, and they paid it. They didn't say, well, gee, there's no causal connection here. You didn't go out and do the estimates. You didn't go out and bid it. You didn't go out and sign the contract. You didn't negotiate the contract. But because of her context, which is really what she's supposed to do, that work, those awards came to Granite as a result of the business development efforts of remote energy.
Well, I mean, the services are described in paragraph one of the first, second, and third contract, and all pretty much consistent.
Paragraph one, also, Your Honor, Appendix A. And if you look at those, the bullet points in Appendix A, I think, is the best way to approach that. It's collaboration, it's coordination, it's leading and implementing, and it's developing and growing relationships. There's nothing in here that says remote energy is responsible for going out and bidding a job. It's responsible for going out and designing. In the case of Barrick and Newmont, these were tailing ponds and not responsible for negotiating contracts. In fact, they wouldn't want her to negotiate a contract because she's an independent contractor. She's not an employee of the company. And nothing required her to be present when the agreements were signed, or to know the person at Barrick who was going to sign these agreements. So I think that Appendix A really, in a nutshell to me, kind of lays out what those job duties are. There's been no question about her performing them. None whatsoever. In fact, in there.
Well, Mr. Elmore just represented to the panel that in her testimony and deposition, she acknowledged she had nothing to do with either the Newmont or Barrick contracts.
Yeah, and that's just incorrect. First of all, again, I'll go back to, they had bid over $300 million in the state of Nevada and had gotten zero awards. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Within 6 months after remote energy is on the job, they get their first inside the fence mining project with Coeur, another one with Ally, and another one with Newmont. They hadn't gotten those in 15 years. That's the testimony. Now, what did she do? Well, number one, her contacts at Barrick said, you're not even on the official bid list. This is in June of 2013. If you're not on the bid list, you can't bid, period. Because of her contacts, they said, first of all, you're not on the bid list. We're going to get you on the bid list. That's how they got on there. And the same with Newmont. Same thing, because of her contacts. Now, did she meet with all the engineers and, you know, talk about designing the project? No, but so
your contention is factually that your client's ability to get Granite on the bid lists for Newmont and Barrick in 2013 was the service for which a bonus would later be earned.
That and other things too, Your Honor. For example, the vice president of business development. She was able to, through her contacts with Newmont, she was able to get a meeting between the appropriate Granite folks and the vice president of development for Newmont. That's a pretty big person to get a meeting with. That's who's going to make the decisions, what's going to be developed, how much, you know, what they want to have done, and who's going to do it. So there were things like that as well, but getting on, if you're not on the bid list, you can't even bid. And so again, it goes back to Mr. Cooper's testimony, which is, yeah, we bid over $300 million worth of work, and we got absolutely nothing prior to the time remote energy showed up.
So what's your position with respect to the argument made by Mr. Elmore that Ms. Carpenter, under the first contract, met with XYZ Mining Company,
right,
and suggested that they look at Granite and consider a bid from Granite? Granite doesn't submit a bid for 7 years to the XYZ Mining Company, but does so. And Granite is successful in getting a $80 million bid. Is your client entitled to a bonus on that?
At some point, Your Honor, we admitted this to the district court. At some point, that connection does become more tenuous. I'm not sure exactly when that time period is.
But, well, let's stick with how one reads and interprets the contract.
Right.
Where in the contract would that right attenuate? If she exists, she exists. If she doesn't exist, she doesn't exist. That is the right I'm referring to. So I mean, the facts might sound extreme, but let's focus on what the contract rights are. Well, where in the contract does your client have the right to get a 5% bonus on a 2% bonus on an $80 million contract bid 6 years after she's discontinued her association with Granite?
Well, I think, Your Honor, it would have to be shown that that award to Granite resulted from some kind of work that Remote Energy Solutions did.
She got them on the bid list. They've never been on the bid list.
Correct. But, again, we're not asking for that. In fact, we did in our complaint actually plead for more than the maximum bonus under this is $150,000. And we pled for $187,000, I think, because at that time, Remote Energy had heard through the grapevine, which is not always the most reliable, but had heard through the grapevine that there was another contract out there. But at the end of the day, when asked about this by the district court, our position was that we could not. So Barrick awarded a contract to Granite. So did Newmont. We could not seek a bonus under both agreements, essentially for the same contract. That's the position we took by the district court. So we were limited to the maximum cap of $150,000. Under the agreement, minus the $56.40 that they had already paid her for the earlier bonus.
Well, it raises an interesting question, and I'm glad you brought this up.
Okay. I hope I'm
so
glad.
If
I did too.
If we are to look at these contracts, contain the same language, and
yes,
the district court made the point that they weren't integrated; they were separate. So, under which contract are you seeking to recover the bonus award on the Newmont and Barrick contracts, the second contract or the first contract?
Yeah, and I would say that the majority of the work for which these awards were made and the work resulted from the efforts of Remote under the first contract,
correct. Well, wouldn't it be necessary to show that? Because if these contracts are truly separate, how would one know which contract the work was performed under? That does imply, at least, that there is necessary to make some kind of causal showing that is connected to one or the other.
Right, and the reason I say the first contract is that's when Remote first came on the job and really used their contacts to develop relationships and with these various mining companies.
Let me ask you one other question.
Sure.
Does the fact that there are separate contracts imply as Mr. Elmore suggests, that you only get the bonus for the period of time covered by the contract.
No, no, because there's no duration. There's no time duration on that. It says for work resulting from.
Mm-hmm.
And what they could have done very easily is said for work resulting from this contract during the term of the contract, right, or for 6 months after the contract expires. There's a, I'm sure, I know you can too, I mean, there's endless ways they could have dealt with this issue. But it's open-ended, and it says, for work resulting from this contract. So she performed the work under Appendix A and did what she was supposed to do, and it resulted in awards to Granite, then she's entitled to a bonus.
Okay. Anything else? You're about out of time.
Just real quick on the offer of judgment. We believe that that offer of judgment was served timely, and that's because under Rule 68, the offer must be made more than 10 days before trial begins, or must be served more than 10 days before trial begins. So that would necessarily be more than 10, but that would mean 11 or more. And under this court's holding in the Palace Station case, it tells us very clearly how to compute that time. You start with a trial date, exclude that, count backwards. That's what we did, and when you do that, we're some 17 days to the good. Now, Granite has said, well, there's this Rule 6A that came after the decision in Palace. The problem with 6A is that applies to time periods less than 11 days. So that means 10 or fewer. And 68 is more than 10. That's 11 or more. There's really no conflict or application there, and 6A simply just doesn't apply. So, in our view, the offer was timely made.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Creighton, Mr. Elmore, Mr. Summers. We appreciate your outstanding briefing and arguments. Your clients are present, so I want to tell them that you've got fine lawyers representing you. These are excellent arguments and outstanding work, and we appreciate their input in deciding the case. It'll stand submitted.